Seated. Good morning, everybody. My name is Norton. If you happen to be visiting or you're with us for the first time today, I'm one of the pastors here at New Denver, and we are in the season of Easter, or it's sometimes called Easter time or Easter tide. And today, I want to tell you one of my favorite stories from the Bible. It's actually the last story in the last eyewitness account of Jesus' life. Here's what John says. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that's James and John, by the way, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them, and they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and they got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. So this is after the resurrection, and the disciples had just gone back to Galilee. That's where most of them were from. Most of them were fishermen by trade, and they didn't know what else to do, so they just went back to doing fishing to make a living. And they're out there one night, and John says they don't catch anything. And then he continues, early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. So apparently they're not very far from shore. They see this guy, but it's just a silhouette. They can't really make out exactly who it is. And it's a little weird that he's telling them where to fish and what to do, but they decide they're going to give it a try. And they catch all of these fish. And then John says this, then the disciple whom Jesus loved, said to Peter, it is the Lord. By the way, the disciple whom Jesus loved is John. This is his book that he's writing, and this is his code name for himself, the disciple that Jesus loved. A bit self-serving there, but John remembers, I think what he remembers is the first time, one of the first times that they met Jesus, him and his friends, they were actually on this very same lake and they had been fishing and Jesus had said, why don't you throw your net over here? And they tried it and they caught all these fish. And it's almost like that memory triggers something in his mind and he punches Peter in the arm and he's like, it's Jesus, it is the Lord. And then look at what happens next. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. And this is such a great contrast between John and Peter. John is like the thoughtful one. He's the more observant one. He's the one who actually figures out that this is Jesus, and it's almost like he's sitting there marveling at this. But Peter has a totally different personality. The second Peter is told that it's Jesus, he throws his shirt on, he tucks it in the belt, and he dives into the water without even thinking about it. Peter is like this man of action. He just jumps in. He can't even think about it. And he knows they're going to be able to row to the shore, but he can't wait that long. He just wants to see Jesus. John goes on. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it. Also some bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. And so Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and he dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153, a very precise number. But even with so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. So Jesus already has this fire going on the shore. He's cooking fish there. And he invites the disciples, bring some of your fish. Let's throw them on the fire. Grilled tilapia for breakfast. Wild caught, not farm raised. What an amazing opportunity to just sit around the campfire and eat fish, breakfast with Jesus. And remember, Jesus is risen from the dead. He didn't just come back to life. It's like Jesus has a totally new and transformed body and life. And I mean, just what an amazing opportunity to sit with the resurrected, risen Jesus and talk and eat breakfast. There's something else going on here, because Peter and Jesus need to have a very direct conversation. And as excited as Peter was to see Jesus, so excited he dives off of the boat and swims ashore, he's not excited about this conversation. Have you ever been in one of those situations where something happened between you and someone else, and it was so damaging that it's just kind of sitting there, and you can't move forward until you deal with what happened? Maybe you said something that was so hurtful, or you did something that was really hurtful, or they said something, or they did something that was so hurtful, and the relationship is pretty much broken. It's going to fall apart. There's no hope for it to move forward until you actually address and talk about and deal with what happened. That's the way it is with Jesus and Peter in this moment. If we go back a few weeks, here's what happened. When the disciples entered into Jerusalem for the Passover festival, Peter had become basically one of the de facto leaders of their little band of disciples. He was always the most outspoken. He's the most active. He's the most energetic. He's ready to do whatever Jesus asks. Whenever Jesus asks a question, he's the first one that raises his hand, and he's always got the right answer, right? He's the first one to call Jesus the Messiah. In fact, Jesus gathers his disciples and they have a dinner that night. And at the dinner before the Passover meal, Jesus basically says, one of you is going to betray me. And Peter's the one that speaks up and says, who's it going to be? Let's figure out who it is. Not me, by the way. Who is it going to be that's going to betray you? In fact, Peter's shining moment is going to come after the meal that night when Jesus tells his disciples this. He says, this very night, you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, and then Jesus quotes this Old Testament passage, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. He's actually talking about himself being the shepherd of this flock. When he is struck, the sheep, the flock, the disciples are going to scatter. Now, Jesus is not asking for a response at this point. Jesus isn't trying to get the disciples to pledge their allegiance to him. He's not trying to get some kind of commitment out of them. He's just sharing with them what's about to happen. But look at how Peter responds. Peter replied, even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Now, Jesus has got to be standing there thinking, Peter, I just said you're all going to fall away. Are you suggesting that I'm wrong on this? Like, are you correcting me, Peter? But Peter's determined. He's devoted. He's sold out. He is committed. He was the leader of the group that Jesus could count on. And so in front of everyone else, Peter basically says, even if all these other clowns fall away, like they might desert you, but don't you worry, Jesus, you can count on me. I will never desert you, even if everyone else does. Look at how Jesus responds. Truly, I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. Again, Jesus is not looking for a response, but Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And then, being the leader that Peter is, all the other disciples said the same. Everyone else jumps in. Peter rallies the troops. He leads the group. They all promise. They all pledge. They're in it to the end with Jesus. And a few hours later, they're going to fail miserably. Because most of us know the story. Judas betrays Jesus. A group of Roman soldiers come with the Jewish high priest and leaders, and they arrest him. They take Jesus into custody, and when they do, most of the disciples scatter. John and Peter are able to follow at a distance the soldiers to try to figure out what's happening to Jesus, and they arrive at the high priest's house where Jesus is being questioned. We're told that Peter is outside in a courtyard while Jesus is being questioned inside. Peter's outside standing around a fire, warming himself with some other people. A young servant girl, teenager, looks at Peter, says, "Aren't you one of the followers of Jesus?" "Oh, no, 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 not me." A second time, "Are you sure you're not one of his disciples?" "No." Mr. like, "I'll die for you, I'll go to the end." "No, no, no, I don't know who you're talking about." A third time, "I swear we recognize you. Weren't you in the garden with Jesus when he was arrested?" And Peter says, "No, I told you, I don't know who he is." And then the rooster crows. And we're told that Peter leaves the fire and he goes off by himself. And he weeps bitterly because of his shame and failure. And now here we are a few weeks later. And Peter finds himself sitting around a campfire again after a meal. And Jesus asks Peter a question. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these other guys?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Now, when Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me more than any of these other guys?" that had to have hurt a little bit, right? I mean, the last time they shared this meal together, Peter had made the promise, "I will stand with you. Even if everyone else falls away, I won't fall away. I have more faith and more love for you. I will go to the end with you." And it's almost like Jesus is throwing it right back at him again. "Do you still think, Peter, that you love me more than anyone else?" And Peter actually says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Now, there's something interesting going on in the word choices here, because Jesus actually uses a different Greek word for love than Peter uses. There's the word agapao and there's the word phileo. Now, sometimes these words are just like synonyms. They both mean love and they're often used interchangeably in that language. It would be like if I say, "I want Taco Bell, I desire Taco Bell, I crave Taco Bell, I long for Taco Bell, yo quiero Taco Bell," right? And all of those things mean the same thing. I'm using different words and different verbs, but it basically all means the same thing. So maybe that's all that's going on here, right? Jesus and Peter just happen to be using different words for love, but they're saying the same thing. Jesus is saying, "Are you sure you really love me? Because last time you made this kind of pledge, you miserably failed, Peter." And Peter says, "Yes, I do. You know I love you, right?" And Jesus says, "Okay, and I have a job for you. I have a purpose for you going forward. I want you now to be the shepherd. I want you now to feed and take care of and protect my lambs, my sheep, my flock for me." Conversation continues. Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." So Jesus asked him the same exact question a second time, and Peter answers again. And again, they both use these different words for love. And so maybe they're not synonyms. Maybe the word choice is deliberate. Maybe what Jesus is saying to Peter is, "Peter, do you agapao me?" And Peter is saying, "Jesus, all I got is phileo." And this is where the subtle distinction between these two words might be important. In ancient Greek, phileo usually referred to feelings you had for someone else. Feelings of attraction, when you were attracted to someone, and not romantically attracted to them, but just when you're drawn to somebody else, when you like spending time with them, being around them. There's an affection there. There's a fondness. There's common interest. There's this feeling of friendship or companionship or camaraderie. It's the kind of people you just like to be with and hang around. Agapao is more action-oriented. It's more active. It's when you actually show love to someone. It's when you do something for someone for their benefit. It's when you devote yourself to someone. You maybe even sacrifice something. You give something up for the benefit of someone else. It's when you're committed to somebody else and you are devoted and you're faithful to them. A phileo is more of this feeling you have in your heart. Agapao is more of an act of will. And again, there's a lot of overlap in these two ideas. We often express both of these kinds of love in the feelings and the actions we have towards those that we are closest to. But it's almost as if maybe Jesus is saying, Peter, do you agapao me? Are you ready to lay your life down for me? Are you going to be faithful to me? Are you committed to the end for me, no matter what, Peter? And Peter is saying, I can't make that promise anymore. I mean, I tried that and I failed miserably. I mean, I wish I could say I'll never fail again like that, but I'm sure I will. There's no way that I could be 100% sold out and devoted and committed the way I used to think I could. And last time I was sitting around a campfire with somebody and they were asking me questions about you, I denied I even knew you. So no, I'm not sure I agape you. But I can say that I phileo you, Jesus. I'm drawn to you. There's something about you. I just want to sit around this campfire with you. When I saw you from the boat, I just dived into the water. I didn't even think about it because I just wanted to be with you. And something happens to me when I spend time with you. But Jesus, if you need agapao, I'm not sure I've got that. So look at what Jesus says next. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him a third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. So Jesus asked him this third time. And of course, Peter's discouraged. He's like, am I not answering the question right? Am I not passing the test? Am I not saying the right thing? Do I not have what it takes? But it's almost like Jesus is doing something so powerful and so healing and so restorative to Peter. Peter had been asked three times if he knew Jesus, and he had denied Jesus three times. And it's almost like Jesus is now giving Peter the opportunity to realize that and to almost say he's sorry. And Jesus is undoing the hurt and the guilt and the shame of Peter's threefold denial of him. Jesus is forgiving Peter. He's healing Peter. He's restoring to Peter. He's even saying to Peter, don't worry, I still have something in store for you. In fact, I've got big plans for you. I'm going to hand over the leadership of this group of people in this movement. I'm going to hand that over to you. But I think Jesus is teaching Peter something even more significant here. Because the third time, did you notice? Jesus switches words. He says, do you phileo me? And Peter had to be thinking, well, yeah, I mean, that's what I've been trying to tell you the whole time. In fact, phileo, that's all I've got right now, Jesus. And maybe Peter realized in this moment, and maybe this is Jesus' way of helping Peter realize in this moment, that's enough. That's all I need. I don't need you to be 100% sold out and committed and devoted all the time. In fact, you can't give that to me all the time. You tried that once. You used to live your life that way and you failed, and you're still going to fail if you keep trying to live that way in the future. In fact, here's what I need from you, Peter. If you're going to live out this mission that I have for you, if you're going to go on and continue in this journey of faith with me, what I need for you and really what you need for yourself is to simply draw close to me. To stay close to me, to spend time with me, to sit around the campfire and just listen and share a meal and eat breakfast with me. I don't always need your pledges of devotion and commitment and allegiance, Peter. Don't get me wrong. You're going to do some amazing things one day. And people are actually going to talk about it. And it's going to change this world. But it will all be a result of you simply staying close to me. To drive all of this home, look at what Jesus says next. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. See, one day Peter did make the ultimate sacrifice and commitment. We know that Peter helped launch this new movement of churches that began to change the world, and he did become one of the shepherds and leaders, and he oversaw and shepherded and took care of God's flock for the next 30 years. But then persecution got really bad under the Emperor Nero, and according to church tradition, Peter was crucified for his faith. And the ultimate act of commitment, devotion, agapao, Peter would one day give his life. But that wasn't the focus that morning when Jesus was just sitting with him. In fact, the very last thing that Jesus says to Peter is this. Then Jesus said to him, "Follow me." That's it, Peter. That's what it all comes down to. That is the very first thing I told you when we were standing on the shore of this lake 3 years ago when I first met you. I said, just come and follow me. And nothing has changed over the last 3 years. Just stay close to me. Be with me. You don't have to make these big promises. You don't have to make these big commitments. You just need to ask yourself, are you close to me? Are you spending time with me? Are you following me? Are you off on your own, charging in a different direction, trying to lead and do your own thing? And that's true for every single one of us as well. See, most of the time, Jesus is not looking for our commitment. He's not looking for pledges of allegiance or devotion. He's not looking for leaders. He's looking for surrender. And he's looking for followers. And it's not just that that's what Jesus is looking for, it's that's what we need. That's what we were made for. Every single day, the most healthy thing that you and I can do in our lives, in our relationships, in our work, in our decisions, in our hearts and in our minds, is not to commit and charge forward and lead. It's to surrender and follow and stay close to Jesus. Is there important work that Jesus has for us? Yeah. Are there going to be some important decisions we have to make? Yes. Is God up to something in each of our lives? Yes. Is God about bringing his rule and reign into our world through our lives and through our communities of faith? Yes. But it takes root. It grows. It flourishes. It is lived out when we simply follow Jesus. When we stay close to him. When we sit around the campfire and eat breakfast with him. Let me pray for us. God, thank you for this story. Thank you for Peter's example. Thank you for his desire to have such big faith. And for Jesus' grace when he fails. In whatever ways that we have each perhaps drifted away from you or have gotten too busy in life or are weighed down by problems or anxiety or burdens or challenges or shame or guilt, whatever. God, I pray that this morning you would help us to simply draw close to you. I pray this in your name. Amen.